The Minister of Police has put a stop to the filling of vacant posts at Crime Intelligence. Meanwhile, Forensics for Justice founder Paul O'Sullivan is fighting the appointment 2 months earlier of a high-ranking officer in that division. He is with us now. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, good morning.
Paul, whose appointment do you have such a problem with and why?
Well, just put yourself in the shoes of a, let's say, a lieutenant colonel or a captain or a major who's got 15 or 20 years service, or a full colonel with maybe 25 years of service or 20 years of service and probably close to the age of 50 or 45 or early 40s even. And then along comes a 29-year-old female with no police experience, no driving license, no firearms training, no police training, no police admin training whatsoever, no specialized skills of any nature whatsoever that can benefit the police service, and she gets parachuted into Crime Intelligence with the rank of brigadier. And now suddenly you've got all these mature, well-seasoned police officials who've spent the best part of their life trying to get promoted, and they see this going on above their very noses. And I mean, it's just shocking, and it's just not permissible. And as a substantial taxpayer, I'm just not prepared to stand by and watch any more of this hanky-panky going on. So I've actually written to this lady, and I've given her an ultimatum. I've told her to resign, hand back the salary that she's been paid, go back to BMW South Africa, where she worked as an admin assistant, and leave the police alone. And I've also asked her to give us details, which we know anyway, but I want her to put it in writing. I want the name of the very senior officer in Crime Intelligence, which facilitated this appointment, who happens to be a family member of hers. So, you know, the rot has to stop now. Crime Intelligence in the days of Richard and Luli was for the best part of a decade a family business. And it's gone back to being a family business. And it's not how competent you are or how good you are at how you do your job. It's who you know and who you're connected to that determines what rank you'll be and how much you'll get paid. And sadly, that is the state of affairs that we have, not only in Crime Intelligence. I picked up a lead now in the KZN province. We have a thing called POP, which is Public Order Policing. Now, Public Order Policing, we've got information that a certain group of individuals have paid bribes of 50,000 rand each to get what I class as undeserved promotion. In other words, two grades up, which comes with it a substantial pay increase, and they pay 50,000 rand bribe to get that position. It's been reported to Lieutenant General, let's have a look here, Nkonazi, who is the provincial commissioner for KZN. He said it's got nothing to do with him. The public order policing comes directly under the control of Lieutenant General Mamateti. It's been reported to her on the 22nd of September, and she's done absolutely nothing about it. And these people in the meantime have been appointed. They've been promoted. Now, this is not a rare occurrence. It just happened in Crime Intelligence and it just happened in Public Order Policing. It's going on throughout the police service. So you have individuals who put their heart and soul into their job. They work their butts off day and night and they do their job meticulously to bring criminals to justice. And then they find that they're being frog-leaked by criminals in the police service who are paying bribes to get appointed. Now, if you pay a bribe to get appointed, it means you're a criminal. You've broken the law. And the law we're talking about is Act 12 of 2004, which is the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Practices Act. Now, If you've got police officials committing corruption to get to the positions they're in, they are not going to do their work in a manner which is going to be free of corruption. They're going to be open to corruption all the way along. And that is the biggest problem we have. And to be frank with you, what the police need is proper management. They're starting to get some good management, but we need to get rid of the current commissioner of police. He's not fit and proper person for the job. At the time when he was appointed, I issued a report stating that he wasn't a fit and proper person, that he wasn't fit to be appointed as chief of police. This is the same person that came back from an overseas trip with a Louis Vuitton bag for his wife, handed to him by a supplier of the police. And he's still for some reason, the commissioner of police. And I just don't understand what's going on. Now, I've gone on record as having been instrumental in removing two commissioners of police. And I've now made it clear that this commissioner of police needs to go. And the sooner he's gone, the better. And then perhaps we can see somebody with ethics and competence. It's not my job to say who should be appointed, but it's certainly, as a substantial taxpayer, it's my right to say that this person or that person may not be appointed because they're not fit and proper for the position. And we see the results of this all the time. On behalf of clients, we go to open cases, criminal cases. We had a case recently where we went to the police station with a client. Well, I didn't personally go, but one of my staff did, went to a police station with a client, and the police refused to open a criminal docket. And we're talking about a fraud case, a very complex fraud case, and a constable on the front desk at the police station said, no, we don't accept typewritten statements. It has to be handwritten. And we're talking about a lever arch file that thick with all the sworn statements in it, which were typewritten and prepared by our officers. And now they want it all handwritten because some nincompoop behind the counter of a police station lacks training. So when you go above his head and speak to the senior officer at the police station, the senior officer is too busy to meet with you. So you then have to invoke threats. You have to threaten the police. If you don't open the docket, we're going to open a docket against you for defeating the ends of justice, for refusing to take this docket. And eventually they open the docket. But why should we have to go to those lengths to open a docket? And it all stems back to police leadership. There is no leadership in the police. When I say leadership, I'm talking about the commissioner of police. He sits in his office. He flies around the country. The new minister, with all due respect, he's got his work cut out because he's trying to make a silk purse out of a pig's ear, and it's impossible. If I reflect back on the Zondo Commission, the Zondo Commission sat for the better part of 4 years. And during the first 2 years or 2.5 years that they sat, my offices provided somewhere in the region of 1,000 hours of input to the Zondo Commission explaining how state capture was facilitated or enabled, if not necessarily facilitated, but enabled by a captured criminal justice system. So we had a criminal leading the police at that stage, a fellow by the name of Pashwani. He's currently on trial, I don't know, a hopeless number of charges. We had a junior person frog-leaped into the position of NDPP. I'm talking about Sean the Sheep Abrahams. And between the pair of them, they neutralized any attempts at stopping state capture. And yet when the Zondo Commission investigated state capture, right towards the end, despite all the work that had been done on it, they decided they were no longer going to be looking at the criminal justice system when they considered the effect of state capture. And I made the point all along that that was a big mistake, because in order for these criminals to get away with what we now know as state capture, and we We mostly talk about the Gupta family, but they weren't alone. There were others. We talk about SAA, how Dudamayeni stripped SAA to the bones through corrupt practices. And now she gets criminally charged. And then fortunately for her, she passes away. So no, there's no justice. Nobody sees any justice being done. And now we have a state-owned airline, which used to be one of the best airlines in Africa. And it's on its knees because it hasn't got the finances that have been stripped and removed by corrupt individuals. And the Sondhaar Commission failed to realize that people like myself, I opened a case against Dudamayeni back in 2014. Now, if you open a criminal case against somebody like Dudamayeni, you don't expect the criminal justice system to protect her. And that's what happened. She was protected. In fact, not only was she protected, they came after me. And they accused me of intimidation because I asked her to leave her job or face the music. Now, the criminal justice system, had it have been doing its job properly, there would have been no state capture. But the criminal justice system was captured first. And that process started in 2010. And it continued. And it continued unabated. So we now have a criminal justice system where a large number of individuals were placed in senior positions, and they're still sitting there. They've never been removed. And I'm mainly focused on the police, because that's really where the effect took place. There were some appointments in the National Prosecuting Authority. People like Sean Abrahams. Well, that's been dealt with. His appointment was found by the Constitutional Court to be unlawful. And he got fired, and he was replaced by Shamila Pitori. Now, Shamila Pitori, God bless her cotton socks, way out of her depth. And she appointed, or the president appointed, another lady to head up the investigative directorate, and she threw the towel in 2 years down the line, and now she was replaced by Andrea Johnson, who was a very, very competent individual. And I believe that Andrea Johnson, in the investigative directorate, at least of the criminal justice system, it's working. And the National Prosecuting Authority, in most areas where we require input from the National Prosecuting Authority, it's working. But as far as the police are concerned, large portions of it remain captured due to the fact that the Sondhaar Commission did not investigate a large number of these appointments. And you now have individuals with high rank who are not fit and proper persons to be in those positions. And the result is you end up where the head of the crime intelligence, Major General or Lieutenant General Kamalu, spends most of his life at a hotel in Umhlanga. And he says he has to live in a hotel because his life is in danger. Well, if your life is in danger and you're a police official and you're not able to cope with the fact that you believe your life is in danger, throw the towel in and leave the police, because every policeman's life is in danger. It goes with the territory. And if you don't feel that as the head of crime intelligence, you don't feel that you're capable of looking after yourself, you're not fit to be a policeman. And then you certainly should not be doing the things that you've been doing, like living in a 75,000 rand a month hotel because you feel your life is in danger. But there's a lot of other issues with Kamalu. He needs to be gone. In fact, crime intelligence needs to be completely restructured. The minister has stepped in the right direction. I think it was a cracking letter that he sent out. The effect of the minister's letter, unfortunately, cannot be retrospective. So you end up in a situation where you've got this 28-year-old girl who's an admin assistant at BMW, gets parachuted in at the rank of brigadier, and I'm saying, the minister might not have picked this up, but I've picked it up, and you're going, whether you like it or not. And
Paul, what position has she been given, and do you know whether she got security clearance for that?
She hasn't got security clearance. Now, that's, you know, I've never heard of anybody being appointed at the rank of brigadier straight in from the street, straight in at the rank of brigadier. The only time I've heard of such appointments is where you have specialist skills. They once appointed a person in at high rank because he was a journalist and he was going to be a spokesman. You know, they have specialist skills. But you might have a doctor, a person who with a doctorate in criminology who's appointed for crime strategic planning or something like this. And he might be appointed at a senior rank. But before they appoint them, they do a security check on them. Because you can't appoint somebody and then say 6 weeks later, oh, sorry, you have to leave now because your security clearance didn't come through. Now, you don't appoint them and then carry out a security clearance. And I mean, if they had have carried out a security clearance on this female, they would have found out that she was a director of several companies that folded and no longer exist. And she's also a director of another company, a current director of another company, which specializes in technical support. And my understanding is that she's been appointed in a position of crime intelligence technical support. So I'm just left wondering what the hell's going on there. Is some hanky-panky there. It needs to be dug into a little bit more. But
Paul, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you called her 2 days ago to discuss her appointment with her. Tell us how that conversation went.
Oh, it was quite interesting. So I pointed out to her who I was and why I was phoning. I pointed out that I didn't phone her last year because I wanted to wait and see that she had actually ratified her position. Because being appointed is one thing, but actually going to work is another thing. And she went to work and she got paid her November. She was appointed on the 1st of November, illegally. There were no processes followed whatsoever. She started work on the 1st of November. She got her salary at the end of November. She got her salary at the end of December. Which means, you know, she had the job and she was part of the furniture. So I phoned her on, I think it was Saturday. You know, if you want to phone somebody and catch them unawares, you phone them at a time that they don't expect to be called. So I phoned her. I concealed my number that I was calling from. And I asked her, what you know, how on earth did she get appointed? Who facilitated her appointment? And what special skills she brought to the police that it brought her in as from being an admin assistant at BMW South Africa to a brigadier in the police. And she was extremely arrogant. And she said, oh, things have changed in the police now. You can be appointed as a brigadier. I said, yes, but I'd like to know who appointed you. How did that, what processes were followed? And she said, if you want to know, you must phone the head office of the police. You can't discuss it with me. And then she put the phone down. So that tells me that she's got something to hide. So I then sent her an email, which I forwarded to you. You've got a copy of that email. And you're welcome to publish that email on your website. And there's some hard-hitting questions in that email. Needless to say, she hasn't given me a reply. But I've got a delivery receipt for the email, so I know she's got it. I also sent her a message. Let me just have a look at the message I sent her. I say the following to her. I confirm you have refused to explain your appointment into crime intelligence at the rank of brigadier. 100% of the men and women below your rank will refuse to respect a girl that was unlawfully appointed to brigadier instead of constable. If you believe I am wrong in my stance, I invite your written submission to, and I give my email address. If I don't hear from you, I will institute criminal charges against you so you can explain to a court what went on. You might want to check if your job at BMW is still open because you will not stay for long in the police. All rights reserved, Paul O'Sullivan, Forensics for Justice. And then I said, P.S., be prepared to hand back all the salary you have received. So, you know, I know for a fact who facilitated her appointment. I'm hoping that person will now have a go at me because I'm going for him next.
And you have alerted the minister and the commissioner to this as well.
I copied, so the email that I sent to her, I copied to, I didn't copy it to the Commissioner of Police. I copied it to the Divisional Commissioner, Lieutenant General Sabir, who's one of the few very decent, ethical senior officers in the police. And I copied it to him, who coincidentally, he's at loggerheads with Crime Intelligence, which falls under him. So I believe that somewhere along the way, it will get slipped in and dealt with in due course. But I doubt very much I will have to institute a civil action to get this woman removed from her position, because I think now that I've flagged her up, her tenure in the police it'll be a matter of weeks.
Now, Paul, you've also seen the letter the Minister of Police sent to the National Commissioner on New Year's Eve with strong directives. What's your opinion of that move?
Well, I can honestly say, in my opinion, he's bang on the button. There should be no posts filled in intelligence division or crime intelligence division, because the people managing the process to appoint people in crime intelligence are treating it as a family business. And they have been doing it for a long time. So the whole of crime intelligence, every appointment that's taken place in the last 10 years needs to be looked at. And when he talks about ports of entry, there's issues there as well. It needs to be looked at. And then, of course, he talks about the
political killing squad.
Yes, the political killing stars team. Now, I know for a fact, because I've had one or two of those members of that team come to us as whistleblowers, saying that actually the political killing stars team is more like a political task team. It's being driven by politics, and it's being used to say, arrest this person and charge them. And it's politicians giving directions. Go and arrest that person and charge them. And then the officer will say, but there's no evidence on which we can charge that person. Oh, well, just charge them anyway. I'll handle the political fallout. So it's become a tool, a political tool, to settle scores.
But the minister is telling the commissioner to disband it now.
Yes, exactly. And I think we'll get some pushback on that. Not necessarily from the commissioner of police, because he will do as he's told. He hasn't got long in his purse now. I do believe that he'll either be fired or he'll retire during the course of 2025. And that will open the door for the appointment of an ethical appointee. And I hope that the person that gets appointed will be somebody that the country can look on and say, right, now let's clean up the police. And I hope that person will, first of all, establish an internal commission of inquiry, not necessarily a judicial commission of inquiry, but an internal commission of inquiry to get to the bottom of some of the very many senior appointments that have been unlawfully made over the last 10 years. And if the person that's appointed as Commissioner of Police in 2025 is an ethical person, I will gladly render a service free of charge in saying, listen here, this is the research that we've done. Here's a good starting block for you, because we've got a number of senior police officials that need to be chased away. And the sooner they're chased away, the better.
Thank you. That was Forensics for Justice founder Paul O'Sullivan speaking to BizNews, and I am Chris Stain. Thank you, Paul.